Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast. I'm Chaz Hathaway. I'm going to share with you a sample from a chapter of Harold A. Whittison's book, Trailing Clouds of Glory. Now, I highly recommend this book to anyone interested in near-death experiences. Rather than being focused on what the afterlife is like, this book focuses on pre-earth life. Now, of course, we only know what we know about pre-earth life from those who have gone into the afterlife because they had near-death experiences which taught them about their heavenly home. And really, when you look at all that's said about near-death experiences, the pre-mortal world and the post-mortal world seem to be the same world. And it seems to be that we're coming from home to Earth and then going back home. However, because this is the focus of the book, there's a little bit more focus on some of the aspects of it, like what the place is like and what kinds of things people do and so forth, which is really cool. I highly recommend that book. Again, it's called Trailing Clouds of Glory by Harold Whittison. So here we go. He says, what does our pre-mortal home look like? What do its inhabitants do? Some of the answers to these questions will be addressed in this chapter by examining accounts of individuals who have been permitted brief glimpses into the heavenly realm and a few individuals who actually visited it. Why we do not remember our heavenly home. Several individuals discovered why they couldn't remember anything about a heavenly home. One such individual was David Goines, who was 13 at the time of his experience. He was hit by a cement truck while riding his bicycle to school. The next thing he knew, he was sitting on a marble bench, admiring the beautiful scenery around him. Next to him, on the bench, sat an old gentleman who spoke to him. "Well, you've had a rough day," the old gentleman said, as if he knew all about it. With a tired sigh, I said, "I sure have." No further explanation seemed necessary as we both sat there. Then I remembered just how much trouble I was in. Hoping he would have an answer I could stand to hear, I asked, "Am I dead?" He smiled to assure me and said, "No, you're not dead. Your body is in a lot of trouble, but it's being well taken care of and you don't need to worry." I demanded of him, "How am I here in this place when I know that my body is back there in the hospital? And where is this place? How do I see this place and you if I'm not with my body? How can I be in two places at once?" I began to feel very upset. He replied, "I am here on behalf of your Heavenly Father's love for you and to remind you of where you came. My first thought was, "The hospital?" He smiled and said, "No, I mean your father's house." It was at that moment that I realized that I knew everything that he was saying was true, and that I had known this place before I was born. I remembered that before I was a physical being, I was a spiritual being, and it all made perfect sense. I was mildly puzzled that I could have ever forgotten such things when he reminded me that to experience a physical life, it was necessary, at least for a while, to forget a little of our prior knowledge so that we might more fully experience physical things, be physically challenged, make choices of free agency, and yes, even make mistakes so that we could learn from them in ways that that only physical life could impart. If we retained all of our prior knowledge, we might not bother to experience the physical life for its fulfillment. We might decide to skip the pain and thus miss the pleasure. I also remembered the promise I had made to my Heavenly Father upon accepting the opportunity, challenges, and responsibility of a physical life to make the most of this opportunity for myself and for Him, and to return to His house with the knowledge and experience gained. This is why we need to forget our prior experience when we take a physical body. Because in order for us to appreciate, benefit, and learn all we can from our physical life, we have to rediscover what we knew before now in physical ways. Likewise, through this physical life, we must also discover how to return to our Heavenly Father. By the good that we do to each other in earth life, by the ways we improve our minds, and by the ways that we learn to cope with and a physical body and physical life, by these things we earn our right, we earn our right of safe passage back to our Father's house. In so doing, we likewise magnify and glory or honor our Father. It is our Father's love that sends us on the journey, and it is our love for Him that will allow us to go back home to His loving arms again. Our memories of heaven are blocked, requiring that we learn to live by faith while on earth. In moments of quiet, quiet moments or on specific occasions, we may sense that our true self exceeds the bounds of the present. So that's the end of the quote by the person who had the experience. Now we're continuing on with Harold Whittison's words. What our heavenly home is like. Cities. Many individuals during their near-death experiences report seeing radiant cities of light. Cecil L. Hamilton was 7 years old when he drowned trying to save his brother. Cecil was later revived, but his brother did not. While Cecil was at the bottom of the river struggling to live, the following happened. A peaceful feeling came over me. I felt my spirit come out of my body and I went into a black void. That was a little frightening. A long way off, there was a pinprick of light. I moved toward it, slowly at first, then faster and faster, as if I were on the top of a train accelerating. Then I stopped and stepped fully into the light. I noticed everything. Sky, buildings, grass emitted its own light. And everything was much more colorful than what we see here. A river meandered around. On the other side was a city and a road running through it to another city and another city and another and another. Right in front of me, but across the river, were three men. They projected themselves to me. They didn't walk or fly. They projected over. I didn't recognize them, yet I knew one was Lynn Bibb. He died a matter of weeks before I was born. I knew these three men were looking out for me, like a welcoming committee, to escort me over the first city. The first city was like first grade. People stayed there until they were ready to go to the next city. Your eternal progression from city to city. That's the end of Cecil's quote. And then Harold goes on to say, Cecil not only saw a number of cities, but learned that their residents were being prepared in one city to move to the next. Although not stated directly, the impression was that continued progression would ultimately lead to the presence of God. While every city of light is impressive and inspiring, evidently the light emanated from the various cities is not of uniform intensity. This fact is also testified to by Lorenzo Dow Young. Lorenzo died and met a heavenly messenger, his guide. The guide said, "Now, let us go." Space seemed annihilated. Apparently, we went up, and almost instantly, we were in another world. It was of such magnitude that I formed no conception of its size. It was filled with innumerable hosts of beings who seemed as naturally human as those among whom I had lived. With some I had been acquainted in the world I had just left. My guide informed me that those I saw had not yet arrived at their final abiding place. Again, my guide said, "Now, let us go. In a moment, we were at the gates of a beautiful city. A porter opened and we passed in. The city was grand and beautiful beyond anything that I can describe. It was clothed with the purest light, brilliant but not glaring or unpleasant. The people, men and women, in their employment and surroundings seemed contented and happy. I knew those I met without being told who they were. My guide would not permit me to pause much, but rather hurried me on through this place to another still higher, but connected with it. It was still more beautiful and glorious than anything I had before seen. To me, its extent and magnificence were incomprehensible. That's the end of Lorenzo's words. Now we're back to Harold's. Lorenzo's guide took him to three heavenly sights. In the first, beings returning from Earth, waited to be assigned to their place in heaven. The second sight was a beautiful city of light, and the third, another city of light even more grand than the first. Lorenzo pleaded with his guide to stay, but he told he was only permitted to visit these heavenly cities, but could only stay briefly because he had not yet fulfilled his mission in mortality. While not many individuals who have had near-death experiences reported seeing multiple cities of light, the single city they did see or visit was extremely impressive and awe-inspiring. Invariably, they commented on the light. It was more than illuminating. It permeated their very being, and they could actually feel it. They reported that light is not reflected from a source outside the city, like the sun, but emanates from every aspect of the city itself. There's no need for a sun because everything in the city produces light that radiates a sense of peace, acceptance, and understanding, and which is all-pervasive. I'm going to take a me break here and just say I've noticed that in most of the near-death experiences I hear about. When they're giving details, sometimes you don't hear it in the less detailed accounts, but sometimes in the more detailed accounts where they're giving specifics of colors and textures and things, they will almost always say that the light seemed to be coming from the thing itself, not bouncing off it as here. You know, I'm almost picturing everything being, you know, you think of those fiber optics and other forms of structures that the light is inside them. I'm picturing everything being like that on the other side, which I think is so cool. Okay, back to the text. Linda Allen reported that she was shown a big city. It had golden colors, and there was what looked like a big explosion coming from the city. There were colors that we do not have on Earth. These colors were so brilliant and intense that they would hurt our eyes if we looked at them on Earth, but not there. It was a glorious, glowing city of buildings and streets. The streets had bricks. They were like golden bricks. The buildings, and I know that this sounds really strange, were smart. They were intelligent. They were buildings of knowledge. That's so cool. This is my words now. That was the end of Linda's quote there. I just think that's so cool. The buildings were intelligent. They were smart. Interesting. Okay, back to Harold. During his near-death experience, Larry Tooley was met by an escort who accompanied him as they moved toward a brilliant light. Here's Larry's words. As we approached the light, I was told, "We cannot go further. Just ahead lies the bounds of our travel." The hillside ahead continued its ascent, ending at the base of the mountain, of a mountain. Cliffs rose steeply, disappearing into a hazy mist. Very high mountains protruded through the mist as fleecy clouds slowly drifted across their craggy peaks. Regal splendor crowned this celestial scene. At the base of the mountains lay a glorious city. Tall spires and pinnacles rose in exalted splendor, challenging the clouds above for dominance. light radiating, undulating from the pearlized buildings. 1,000 different shades of color filled the spectrum. I struggled to comprehend the sheer immensity of the city that lay before me. At first, I failed to see the delicate detail of the domed spires until I studied the scene in more detail. Each spire's dome was capped in pure gold. Pinnacles the color of platinum rose among the spires. My emotions overcame me as I sank to my knees in the tall grass at my feet. Through each arched doorway and window shimmered a faint blue light. That's the end of Harold's section on cities. He now goes on to a section about buildings. Larry Tooley saw magnificent buildings, but from a distance. Faith, however, was able to see a heavenly city and enter a building. It is magnificent. So magnificent, this is her quote now. So magnificent that words do not exist that can adequately describe what I witnessed, but I will try. I was taken to this awe-inspiring building. There were steps leading up to massive doors. On either side of the doors were great fluted columns with ornate capstones. As I entered the two gigantic doors, I found myself in a large foyer leading to a grand room, round in shape, with stairs ascending up on the far side. In the center of the round room was a round, translucent, crystalline table with a gorgeous bowl filled with fruits and flowers. It had a central column supporting it and three small legs radiating out from its base. The ends of the legs had what looked to me like the feet of some animal. Hanging over the table was a glorious chandelier that radiated light. The floor of the room appeared to be made out of white marble. Leading into the room were three doors, one directly across from me, one to my left and one to my right. The stairway across from me wound up to a marble balcony. On the walls were what appeared to me to be pictures of beloved leaders who had lived on earth. The doorways had arches, as did the windows. Around the windows hung gorgeous tapestries and curtains. The combination of colors, textures, and materials give the appearance of serenity, peacefulness, and beauty. Rebecca saw, and now that's the end of that quote, and Harold goes on. He says, Rebecca saw multiple buildings during her heavenly visit and commented on their beauty and grandeur. Now quoting Rebecca. As we walked, my eyes drank in the splendor of my environment. The houses, as we approached and passed them, seemed wondrously beautiful to me. Wondrously beautiful to me. They were built of the finest marble, encircled by broad verandas, the roofs or domes supported by massive or delicate pillars or columns, and winding steps led down to pearl or golden walks. The style of the architecture was unlike anything I had ever seen, and the flowers and vines that grew luxuriantly everywhere surpassed in beauty even those of my brightest dreams. Turning to the left, my escort led me through the beautiful marble columns that everywhere seemed substituted for doorways into a large oblong room. The entire walls and floor of the room were still of that exquisite light gray marble, polished to its greatest luster, and over walls and floors were strewn exquisite long-stemmed roses of every variety and color, from the deepest crimson to the most delicate shades of pink and yellow. Isn't that a beautiful description? That's the end of the quote by Rebecca. Now going on with Harold's words, Roy Mills, whose extensive near-death experience will be reported on later, told about seeing a great hill with an enormous glowing building on top of it. The dazzling building seemed to him to be as big as a small city, with two enormous luminous front doors. Sarah saw a building that appeared to be made of white alabaster marble with a pinkish hue, more beautiful than anything she had ever seen on Earth. As she concentrated, she realized that she could see through the walls and watch activity going on inside. One room that caught her attention was a large study or library, which had rows of huge ancient books and beautifully carved desks, yet simplistic in decor. People moved about freely and happily. She saw another room where people were preparing food. She also saw a man sitting in what looked like a module, working at a type of machine, like a computer, placing colored crystals with pointed ends in spaces. Another me break real quick here. This little paragraph here seems to give evidence to the eating aspect that is still perhaps a question to some of whether people eat in heaven while these people were preparing food. It does beg the question of where do they get it from? So do they have to crush wheat seed? And if so, the plants up there are alive, have spirits. Where does the wheat come from? Same with if you're cooking meat. I mean, whose meat is it and how are you eating it? I'm not clear on that. However, because of the nature of what seems to be the case, the idea that if you want something to be a certain way, it becomes that way. And I'm not entirely clear how that takes place. I'm not 100% sure if it's all thought or if there's actual physical exertion that brings it about, as it would be here. Here it's like completely that. But whether there's a thought aspect, you know, and maybe this is, I don't know. I wouldn't even know where to go with that as far as where the food comes from, but it appears that there's food. It also appears that there are books and learning, which is interesting because it makes you think, what language would those books be written in? Or are they books that you simply absorb the knowledge from them by holding or flipping through them? And if that's the case, you know, you could say, why books? And why not just a little device that happens to contain all that, you know, and just a rock or something? I don't know what. So lots of questions that I have about that, but it's so cool to me that these things are all of familiar things. Buildings, cities, I mean, floors, walls, doors, food preparation, I mean, you know, desks. All these things are familiar things to us. Now, would this look different to another being who is maybe not from our time or from, you know, the Earth or whatever? I don't know. But I can't imagine that the spirit world, as it is small. And therefore, I can't imagine that it wouldn't be incredibly diverse in different places, in different realms, in different levels. The more I learn about the spirit world, the more I think pretty much, you know, if you ask the question, well, can you X? The answer is almost always yes. Seems to be, anyway. Anyway, vegetation is Harold's next section. I'm excited about this one because this is a garden one. Now, I have read this book, but it's been a while, but I get excited when I hear about plants and animals and things. In addition to the building on top of the hill of a hill mentioned above, Roy Mills said he also saw breathtakingly beautiful gardens and rolling green hills as far as his eyes could see. The colors were magnificent beyond anything he had ever seen on Earth. Becky recalled walking through gently rolling hills covered with green grasses and flowers. And this is Becky's quote. This exquisitely beautiful scene appeared to stretch before me forever. Everything had a spirit about it. I could sense not only life in the grass and flowers, but they also radiated a knowing, a communication that conveyed love, peace, and joy, all blended together. And the colors, Even the colors radiated life, knowledge, friendliness, and goodwill. They were beautiful beyond earth description, brilliant, yet at the same time soft, gentle, twinkling, luxurious pastels that seemed to send their beauty right into my soul. Francis, okay, that's the end of Becky's quote, and what a quote, you know, wow. Okay, so Francis was very impressed with the flowers she saw, and this is quoting Francis. There were so many flowers and trees. They were alive. The flowers were so bright. They had colors I had never seen before. The blue ones seemed to be polarized light. Yellows felt as if the sun was inside them. Their brightness was as intense as looking at the sun in this world, except that there it didn't hurt my eyes. They were incredibly beautiful, and they were made of light. So cool. Okay, Harold says, Arlene described the beautiful garden she found herself in. The grass was such a lovely shade of green, and the stems of flowers grew up out of the grass. I did not recognize any of the flowers, but they were exceptionally beautiful, colorful, and delicate. They were so beautiful that when I returned to Earth, I set out on a quest to learn as much about flowers as I could, and searched in every botany book I could find, but the flowers I saw were not of this world. Their petals are very sheer, but brilliant in their colors. They seem to have the loveliest parts of many flowers I have seen on Earth combined. There are no words to describe the beauty of the flowers I saw. That's the end of Arlene's quote. Harold says, during her experience, Holly Draper saw herself preparing to come to Earth. In one scene, she was playing with other children by a fountain located just in front of a great building. There was a bench surrounding the fountain where she remembers trailing her hand in the water, marveling at its color and composition. On the side of the fountain, away from the great building, was an open area with grass, trees, flowers with butterflies flitting about them, and birds. It was a warm, peaceful place with a delicate fragrance. The flowers were in sculptured gardens highlighted by majestic trees in full bloom. There was a variety of trees, each of which fitted in and complemented the scene. Faith did not see birds, but she could hear their songs, which added to the sense of peace and serenity. So, taking a quick break there. So that was not a quote by Holly Draper, but it was describing Holly's experience. There was birds, there was butterflies, there was flowers and trees. I like how it said that the flowers were sculptured gardens highlighted by majestic trees in full bloom. And everything seemed to complement the scene. Very interesting. Next, Harold goes into a section called Inhabitants. While the beauty and grandeur of the heavenly realm greatly impressed all those who were privileged to see it, it was the inhabitants who excited them the most. As discussed in greater detail in later chapters, many recognized beings that they had known on Earth. These beings emanated light and were perfect in shape and form regardless of what they had last looked like on Earth. The beings were usually there to escort them and inform them that they had to return to Earth. Some people reported the presence of angelic beings who emanated light of a greater quality and intensity than those who had once lived on Earth. These beings also radiated a sense of acceptance and unconditional love that was impossible for the experiencers to describe. But there is one being who stands out from all the others. The light radiating from him exudes not only love and acceptance, but an overwhelming aura of power, strength, and authority. The light radiating from this being is so intense and beautiful that those who have seen it are absolutely sure that they were in the presence of the Supreme Being. Many intuitively recognized him when they came into his presence as memories came flooding back of who he is and the relationship they had with him before coming to earth. Some were told by a voice resonating with authority that they were in the presence of God, but most knew this fact without such a pronouncement. In other places in this book, you will read accounts of people who met this being and how being in his presence transformed them. Okay, so he goes on after this to talk for several pages about the being of light, which I think would be a beautiful thing to read, but I'm actually going to skip it, partly because we've gone over much of it. It's talking about God or Jesus Christ, people standing in his presence and so forth. Please go get this book. It's just absolutely phenomenally beautiful and well written. And it's just packed with little snippets of people's experiences like that. I mean, this book is really impressive. Harold Wittison, he's a university professor, taught at many different universities, and this became something of an obsession to him, his near-death studies. And he unfortunately died several years ago, but only unfortunate for us, because for him, all this stuff that he's been learning, he's finally going home. And what a beautiful thing. What a beautiful thing. I will, however, read his summary thoughts of the chapter. From the foregoing accounts and many others, it is apparent that our premortal home is a place of indescribable beauty. In general appearance, it reminds observers of cities on earth, but without pollution or disorder. The vegetation reflects a pleasing order and seems designed to add to the overall beauty and grandeur of the scene. The cities emanate light, as does everything in them, including their inhabitants. Some individuals were shown more than one city, with the different cities evidently having differing functions and emanating different intensities of light. These cities of light are awe-inspiring or impossible to describe. To a significant degree, the appearance of our heavenly home seems to be patterned after our celestial home. Perhaps our attempts to beautify our earthly homes are an unconscious desire to recreate our heavenly home on earth. As to the inhabitants of heaven, they are equally impressive. Not only do they emanate light, but they exude an aura of unconditional love. While everyone there emanates light, there is one being who emanates light like no other, and leaves such an impression on observers that their lives are forever changed. Who is this being of light? Children and adults alike report that it is God, or Jesus, and may refer to him as their Father in heaven. There's one sentence in that summary that I think sums up an important point. And before I read it again, let me make the point. Some people, when they hear these kind of things, they have the question of, well, wait a minute, how can the place just be like Earth? I mean, it's got buildings, it's got, you know, computer-like things. What's the deal, you know? We can't take those things back to heaven with us, so what are they doing there? You know, are people going back and inventing them there? Well, there's that possibility, I guess, but I don't think that's the case. I think the key is this sentence right here. He says, to a significant degree, the appearance of our earthly homes, or of our earthly home, seems to be patterned after our celestial home. That makes total sense to me. It makes sense to me that coming to Earth, having lived there, and being familiar with that landscape, we would want to recreate it here. And obviously we wouldn't be able to hit nearly the perfection that is there, but we're aiming for it. And, you know, I'm sure there's things here that we don't have there, but not because, you know, most of it, not because we were more original or something, but rather because they've got a better version there, or they've got something even better, you know. Do they have Angry Birds and smartphones there? I don't know. I imagine they have some kind of... if they've got computers, they've probably got portable ones. What would they do? Well, I don't know. If the brain or the mind, the consciousness, is able to get answers to questions, you don't even have to say, hey, Google, to get your answers, apparently. So, you know, maybe that would be a redundancy. I don't know. And what's the function of all these things if you're in this place of perfection and unlimited knowledge and beauty and so forth? I don't know. And I'm not entirely convinced that anyone at any time can have any answer to its fullness at any given moment. I'm under the impression that there are places and situations where that knowledge can be given, such as in the presence of God, in the presence of that grand light. And then other times they go to these house of learning, temple of learning, temple of knowledge, whatever you might call it, these kind of places where they have books and so forth, and you go and you get specific knowledge around certain topics, much as you would here, but without the burdensome reading that it takes. Now, if you enjoy reading, it sounds like there's going to be plenty of books, so you'll probably just be able to get through them faster and therefore have a lot more time for getting through a lot more books, you know. Fascinating and interesting to me. Now, whether these places, as we describe them, whether this is consistent throughout all the different realms, I think is kind of irrelevant. The point is that it's all there. It's all there. And if you want to go to a place of learning, it's available to you. If you want to work on a computer, clearly there's that there. It sounds like if there's food, that if you want food, there's food there. I would hope that it would lack all the unhealthy aspects that our food here has, meaning that it won't, you know, make you overweight or give you, you know, heart disease and whatever. Without a heart, it can't be disease, so you should be okay there, right? Anyway, what a beautiful description of our heavenly home. And to think, it makes sense to me that we would need to forget that to come here, because we get the perfect version. I mean, imagine if suddenly, knowing all that you know now, suddenly have to go back to 1890 and start living there in that world. That would be hard. And that doesn't even approach the differences of comparison between here and the other side. So, what a beautiful thing. So again, as we finish up, share these podcasts with a friend. Leave a review on iTunes, an honest review. I'm not asking for a 5-star review if you don't feel like it's 5 stars worth of material. But please leave a review. It just helps other people to find it. And also gives me feedback and so forth. And I know I always end by saying thank you to all of you, but I really do mean it. I really do. And I have heard from many of you since pausing the podcast and also from starting back up again, of how the podcast has touched your life or has encouraged you in some ways. And I can't tell you, I cannot express how meaningful that is to me. We all want meaning in our lives. And there's something about studying this stuff that makes you feel like you should be doing something worthwhile. You should be doing something to bless lives. You should be doing something to reach out. And I do look forward to my life review when I can look back and see all the people that were touched. But thank you to each of you who are listening. Even if you don't contact me and let me know, just know of my appreciation to you. It means the world to me that it's making a difference for you. And so with that, thank you again so much for listening.